Welcome to today's New Life Live podcast. Today's podcast is brought to you by you. Your donations make this podcast possible. Please consider donating today using the New Life app, visit newlife.com, or call 1-800-NEW-LIFE.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to New Life Live. Steve Artemer here with Dr. Sherry Denham and Dr. Dave Stoop, and your phone calls. That's the most important thing. Come join us today for New Life Live.
Welcome to a classic program from the archives of New Life Live with host and founder of New Life Ministries, Stephen Arterburn. New Life Live is dedicated to transforming lives one at a time thanks to the giving hearts of you, our listeners. Our goal is to provide you with wisdom from God's Word to give you hope and help in life's hardest places. All of our calls for this classic program have already been taken, but if you're hurting and New Life can help, call 1-800-NEW-LIFE. That's 1-800-639-5433. Now here's Steve.
Hello there, everybody. Welcome to New Life Live. Steve Artemer here, Dr. Sherry Denham.
Hello.
And Dr. Dave Stoop.
Greetings.
We've been together a lot today, and we're glad you're here with us. You know, one of the things that we do that we're most proud of is the Every Man's Battle Workshop. Some people that go are sex addicts, some are not. Well, I want to ask Dr. Stoop and Dr. Denham, is sexual addiction a real live addiction, like alcohol addiction, heroin addiction, and if so, why? If not, why?
Well, I would say yes, it is, and it's based on some of the findings now in the research that shows that the pornography is, in particular, has gotten to be so intense that they say that it's no different than having a literal affair. And if that does something to the whole system of the body and to the brain, as Sherry will tell us in a minute, you don't have a receptor for an alcohol, you know, or a drug, but you have receptors that are craving the excitement and the adrenaline rush and everything else that goes with a sexual addiction. And it's all under your own control in a fantasy. It becomes progressive. And it messes up your life. Those are some of the other indicators.
I have some good friends. They're not smart in this area, but they're good friends. And they believe it's just a compulsive disorder. But I don't necessarily know how to describe this. But it seems to me that the compulsive disorder is more of a drive to have to do something. And then the sexual addiction is more of a pull to experience relief, but the compulsive disorder, it really doesn't have a euphoric effect at the end of it like gambling does, because it activates those same receptors, and I believe sex is an addiction just as chemical addiction as alcohol addiction.
The compulsive disorder, you know, reduces anxiety in general, but an addiction has something that I'm trying to get, a feeling that I'm trying to create that doesn't last, so I have to repeat it, and it's that type of thing.
What do you think, Sherry?
Well, you know, I have had the privilege of looking at some brains of people that have struggled with sexual addiction. And I often have people ask me, so what does a sex addict's brain look like? And I say, there is no blueprint for a sex addict's brain. There's no one brain type. But what I do see in light of the SPECT scans is we often see a couple of areas. One is a low prefrontal cortex. So that boss of the brain or breaks in the brain, there's usually a decreased blood flow in that area of the brain, meaning that I don't have the breaks. I don't have the same kind of breaks that other people have. And then from the internal brain perspective, you know, we often see anxiety or depression that's being masked by the dopamine squirts, as I call them. When you reach out to that pornography, you see it. And then if there is a corresponding orgasm with it, it's actually like going to the medicine closet and getting some morphine out. So there is changes in brain chemistry that happen, and so you need more and more to get a high level of arousal. So it's serious. People don't realize that it does change your brain chemistry.
All right.
That's an addiction.
The main thing is, if you have it, you need to call us at 1-800-NEW-LIFE and ask about the Everyman's Battle workshop. We'll be back with phone calls right after this here on New Life Live.
Welcome back to this classic program from the archives of New Life Live. If you're hurting and New Life can help, call 1-800-NEW-LIFE. That's 1-800-NEW-LIFE. Now back to New Life Live.
We're back. We're going to go to Angie from Dayton, Ohio. Hello, Angie. Welcome to New Life. You listen on the internet.
Yes, I do. How are you?
Great. What's going on?
I'm going through a bitter divorce.
Mm-hmm.
And I have two boys, 14 and 12. I'm so sorry. I have the hiccups.
Really?
I can't believe I've been waiting this long and I got the hiccups.
Boo. Okay. Boo.
Please bear with me.
Boo. Did we scare you?
Okay.
Breathe in a bag.
You know, if you could, to get rid of them, I don't care what you did.
Breathe in a bag in between.
Quick question for you.
Okay.
Why is it bitter? Why is your divorce bitter? I mean, all divorces are bitter, I think, but why is yours really bitter?
Well, my husband is on his third marriage. All of them ended in adultery. Mm. And we were married 15 years. Mm. We have two beautiful boys. 14,
I thought you said you were going. I thought you said you were going through a divorce.
Yes, because the best way to explain what he is a narcissistic sociopath.
All right, now wait. Let me just clarify here. You're the fourth wife.
Third.
I'm the third.
Third, and this one ended in adultery, like the other two.
Right. And he's already engaged to his fourth wife.
Okay, but you're still married.
His mistress that he moved in with.
Now, why does that create a bitter divorce?
I just want him to go, and he just keeps prolonging this divorce over and over again.
Well, what's the matter with your attorney? Why doesn't your attorney get that done for you? I said.
I wish she could, but, you know, this is my first divorce. I believe that, you know, marriage is a covenant, not a contract, and I don't know what's going on.
So did Jesus.
I'm a rookie.
Hey, so did Jesus. Jesus thought it was a covenant, too, but he also said when people commit adultery, you're not bound to that covenant.
Right.
Didn't Jesus say that?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Okay.
So why were you bringing up that it's a covenant, not a contract?
Well, I believe when I stated that our marriage was for better or for worse,
mm-hmm.
for worse, that it wasn't for, for better or for worse, except A, B, and C.
Well, but you didn't have the choice. He left you, right?
Absolutely.
Okay. Did you know about the affairs when you married him, Angie?
No, because he lied about it. He said it was an emotional affair. I'm so sorry. And he moved in immediately with his mistress.
Okay. So now what's the question for us?
Okay. I have a 14-year-old and a 12-year-old. My 14-year-old is definitely trying to manipulate his dad and me during the situation. And my son hadn't been home in a long time, and he has been finally coming home recently. He told me he was trying to push me away so that, you know, he doesn't lose his dad. Okay, so he's been coming home, but he's been wanting me to drive him to a lot of these functions that he has. It has to do with police and fire stuff,
mm-hmm.
which is what his dad was involved in and mm-hmm. what I'm currently still involved in.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm so sorry. And so anyways, if I don't do exactly what he wants me to do, then he brings up, well, I'm going to dad's. And my answer to that is, fine, go to dad's. I'm not going to beg you to be here. And
I bet that draws him to you, huh?
I'm sorry?
I bet that draws him to you, huh?
Well, I don't know. Yeah. I don't know. But he ended up leaving yesterday.
Okay.
And he went to his aunt and uncle's house, who has totally been enabling his dad.
Okay, so what's the question for us?
When do I stop? You know, I don't want to be used by my son. And that's exactly what he's doing.
Well, what about this being about your son?
What do you mean?
Well, rather than I don't want to be used by my son, what if it was I want my son to handle this trauma in healthy ways?
I would love that.
Because, you know, he's the kid here.
Absolutely. He's the innocent victim, him and his brother.
Yeah.
And the thing is that last Friday, he got in a fight with a kid that he says was bullying him.
Mm-hmm.
He told his dad two or three times. His dad never did anything. Well, he instigated this fight, and there has to be consequences to that. And I have boundaries, and I have my limitations. And so when he wanted to go to the police department, I said no. And he threw a fit because I wasn't doing what he wanted me to do. And then he ended up calling his dad, which called his aunt and uncle, mm-hmm. my husband's side, and he left. And this has been kind of brewing for the last few months,
mm-hmm.
and where he wouldn't come home at all, but he would come home if I did the things that he wanted me to do.
Okay, so this is the life of a divorced parent. This is what kids do.
Right.
And when they do it, you want to try to connect with them and not be manipulated versus disconnect and not be manipulated or controlled by him.
Right. And I told him that there's only two rules at my house. When you come home, you have to respect me and respect my house. And in part of that, when you're here, expect to go to church on Sunday.
Now that's three.
Well, yeah, you're right. It's three.
What is the 12?
That's all. It's not like I'm asking him to get up on my roof and fix some shingles.
Okay.
Let's
hear from Dr. Stephen Sherry.
Angie, what's your 12-year-old doing? How's he handling it?
Well, he's the strongest, I think, out of all four of us. But last week, his dad picked him up on his night because now it's to the point where he doesn't want to go to his dad's. He's told his dad unless he marries her or if she moves out, he doesn't want to go up there. And he got a hold of him and brought like five biblical scriptures to him and was trying to justify his actions. Like he brought up, well, it says in the Bible that gays should be killed. Should we kill gays? You know, he was bringing stuff like this to the point where my son, when he got dropped off, he was vomiting in the toilet. He was so upset. You know, and I don't understand. So the only thing my youngest son and I have had to grasp onto was the love of Christ.
Okay. Let's try to give you some help here.
Okay.
Have you thought about getting some help for these kids and you?
Oh, absolutely. I signed my oldest son into a psychiatric hospital for the second time because...
What about the three of you getting some help together with a counselor?
My ex won't do that.
No. The three of you
is
not.
The 12-year-old, the 14-year-old, and you.
I haven't thought about that.
Well, that seems like to me that you guys really need a third party there to help you adjust to the reality, connect with each other through it, and hear each other and understand. Man, you're throwing out some pretty amazing stuff. You got a 12-year-old throwing up, and you got a 14-year-old who attempted suicide
twice.
That has also gained about 50 pounds in the last year as well.
Oh,
also.
You've got to get somebody to work with you.
But here's
each
the problem.
One of the kids have
okay,
their counselor.
But here's the problem. You're asking us about him manipulating you when he's tried to commit suicide twice and he's gained 50 pounds, and you've got a 12-year-old throwing up. I'm just saying, I think there may be a lack of focus on these kids, and they're making sure they get noticed here.
Yeah, it's
right.
Angie, you just said that each one of the kids has their counselors, mm-hmm. but nobody right now is doing any family counseling.
No.
That's a big... That is really a piece that's missing.
Mm-hmm. It is. And my ex does not believe that depression is a medical condition.
That's irrelevant, Angie.
I don't care how bad your ex is. I don't care what your ex thinks. I don't care how bad he is. I think that your sons need some help in connecting yes. with their mom, especially if you're the healthiest one of the two.
Here's what's happening, Angie. You had a four-person dual-parent family that is disintegrated. And it's in the process now of disintegrating even more. But in divorce, you have to establish a single-parent family for you and your boys. And it's too chaotic for you to do that. You've got to get with a counselor who will work with you as a family, the unit, the three of you, you and your two boys, to help you establish the sense of family, because that's what they need. That's going to give them their security, and it's going to give them, you know, what they need so that he's not going to gain any more weight or try to commit suicide again. So somehow that's your first step. And you look at it as...
Well, the problem is that, I don't mean to interrupt, but my ex has the custodial guardianship of my oldest son, and I have the custodial guardianship of my youngest son.
Well, and I doubt that he's going to prevent you from getting counseling for your son.
How did that get set up?
That's just strange. I'm sorry.
When he was discharged the second time, my oldest son, from suicidal and homicidal towards his dad ideology, I started a new job, and he went down there and signed my oldest son out stating that he didn't need to be down there. And then since then, the hospital recommended that my oldest son get weekly counseling, and he hasn't even made 50% of his, you know, counseling appointment.
Well, it's a very,
so
very
I'm
difficult
situation.
Yeah,
really.
It's a very difficult situation, but I think we've encouraged you to do something that really needs to be done. And maybe you need to go down there, and you need to tell these people, we have to have family counseling.
Yeah, they've got to have something. Because think about it. Both boys are feeling split right now. The legal system has said, okay, you go with dad, you go with mom. There's going to be animosity just in that division. And there needs to be something to bring that family together. And so family counseling with a strong, licensed counselor is what you need.
And the family we're talking about is the single-parent family.
Correct.
You, Angie, and your two boys, not your ex. He's not a part of that anymore.
Well, this is just another one of those things that often happens in divorce.
It's
the kids pay
common.
The price. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that's why we encourage people, no matter what, to try to make it work, especially when there are kids involved. Try. Mm-hmm. Don't just try harder on your own, but get some help. Try to pull the thing back together. You won't regret that. You also won't regret if you join us for the Everyman's Battle Workshop. It's going to be a great time, and a lot of men are going to be there, and their lives are going to be different after that weekend. They will be launching on a journey toward sexual integrity and sexual purity, and come join them, and you do that by calling 1-800-NEW-LIFE. All right, let's talk with Christy from Seattle, Washington. Hello, Christy. Welcome to New Life Live. You listen on KGNW.
Yes, I do.
Okay. How could we help?
Hi. My basic question is, how do I go about asking for financial assistance from my Christian friends?
Okay. Why do you need it?
Because I will probably be out of money by February. I've been semi-employed for 2.5 years. I have no debt. I have perfect credit. My mortgage is up to date for now. I've tithed all my life, but... I see the bottom, and, you know, Christians tend to be conservatives. Conservatives tend to say you shouldn't rely on the government, and I feel like, you know, I need help, and how do I ask them for that help? And I also kind of need to know, who do I ask?
Okay, how will you pay that back?
I can pay it back if they want it paid back if I want to get a job. I've been looking for work for 2.5 years.
So
you've been out of work for 2.5 years, Christy?
I've been semi-employed.
Okay.
I had a contract job for 6 months.
You've got a big mortgage payment, huh?
What's that?
You've got a big mortgage payment, huh?
Well, it's not bad, and my home is actually not, you know, over the reversed, or however they say
upside down.
but you've got more expenses than you have money coming in.
Yes.
And so at this point, you're asking the question, what do I keep on board and what do I throw overboard? But I hear you asking, how do I have friends help me keep the boat afloat? And you may have to let some things go.
Well, name it. I mean,
we'll talk more right after this.
We'd love to hear from you. You can write us at P.O. Box 1029, Lake Forest, California, 92609. Now back to New Life Live.
We're talking with Christy, and so Christy, I thought you were asking for a loan, but what you're asking for are your Christian friends to give you money. Is that right?
I'm asking for financial assistance. If they want to give me the money, I can take the money. If they want to lend me the money, I can pay them back. Although I don't like owing people anything, but you know, I just need help.
Yeah. And why do you think it is that you haven't been able to get a job?
Could be the recession.
Sure.
Yeah, you're not alone in that, Christy. So many people have been hit with this. And the most difficult thing is exactly what you're saying today, is you feel desperate. Like, I've just got to start asking for everyone to come and help me because I'm trying to keep my boat afloat. And some of the most painful decisions are made right now and right here in your life, where you have to start going. Sometimes it is giving up. Sometimes it's having to let go of some of the things that you're holding on to because you just haven't been able to find a job that can help support it. Do you know what I'm saying? So it might mean letting things go, getting some financial counsel right now. Because to ask your friends to financially support you right now is kind of just a Band-Aid until you get a job.
Correct.
You know what I'm saying? And you're trying to put a Band-Aid on a bleeding limb. It's been bleeding for a while, for 2.5 years.
Yep.
And so you may need to make some hard decisions. Have you called your bank, seeing if they can kind of work something out on the loan for your house? You know,
not that you really need specifics, but because I've been unemployed, no one's going to loan me anything. No one's going to. I'm pretty much stuck. I mean, in order to get my loan modified, I have to have a positive budget and be behind in my mortgage.
I am not
behind in my mortgage, and I have a negative budget.
But if you don't have help from your friends, you will be behind.
Yes.
Okay. And all I'm saying, darling, is that may happen. And what are you doing to deal with the emotions that are wrapped around that? Because that may happen. You may lose your home.
Okay.
And that's a potential reality. I've sat with a number of people over the last couple of years who've been in your exact shoes, and some of them have lost their homes. Some of them have had to go back to the bank, and some of them have had to get apartments and start over again. It's one of the most painful things that they've gone through. But as they've gotten unburdened, they're getting their feet back on the ground again.
So you're saying I should assist myself?
Well, I'm saying going to your Christian friends asking for help, really, you have to be realistic with yourself and saying, is it going to help for me to get $50 from this person, $100 from this person? How long is that going to last?
And will I have credibility if I haven't eliminated every expense from my budget?
I have big credibility because I'm probably the cheapest person they all know. I mean, I'm talking to you in a tree house with a blanket wrapped around me.
Wow, and it's cold up there. Hey, you know, where you asked, where do you start? I would think you start with your church, Christy. I wouldn't go to my friends. I would go to my church first, and I would talk with my pastor, and I would get some real sound spiritual help from him. That's where I would start, and then.
And see if he can refer you to someone, a Christian that can help you financially. Maybe sit down with you and look at what reality is. Because sometimes when all that's happening around us, we get so panicky and desperate, we just start making decisions like to get help. But you need someone that can help you, guide you through this time.
Yeah. So that's where I'd begin. And then
I'm sorry for what you're going through.
Yeah.
It is common. And
painful.
The commonality doesn't make it any less painful, unfortunately.
No.
Boy, it's so humiliating when you have to ask for help. I've had to ask for help in my life. It's just, it's not fun. And, you know, and especially if you're asking a friend and you're really putting them in a very difficult place to be, unless they're just full of money or excess and they're delighted to be of help. It really does strain a relationship, though, in most cases, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think the hardest part is just letting things happen, you know? I mean, getting wise counsel, but at some point, you may have to make those choices.
Yeah,
and it's been painful.
You may not have any choice. You may not have
you
any
may
choice.
Not have choice.
And the big issue of entitlement, if you go to them and you feel entitled to them to give you support, it may not go well.
Mm-mm. Well, and sometimes, I mean, she sounds really responsible.
Yes,
got a
she
great,
is.
She
oh,
is
yeah.
super responsible. Got mm-hmm. a great credit report, pays all her bills on time,
right.
is very frugal in how she spends. It's this type of person that has the hardest time letting mm-hmm. something slide off the cliff. Do you
yeah.
know what I mean?
Because they
right.
feel so irresponsible.
They feel
but
guilty. Like
nothing you can do.
There's yeah. nothing. Mm-hmm. In certain situations, that you've done everything you can do, and you just have to let go.
Yeah. There's some joys of renting, you know.
Yeah,
if she's not
what
upside
is it?
Down, if she can find, well, you know, you call somebody else when the pipe breaks or whatever. And not as expensive sometimes. All right. We'll take a break. We'll come back for the final half of New Life Live. We're really glad that you're here with us. If you can help us, it is 1-800-NEW-LIFE. 1-800-NEW-LIFE. To give this program life in your area, for you to continue to watch it or to hear it in the form in which you do at the place where you do, we need your help. And I'll tell you, we're like her. We're wrapped in blankets around here.
Hmm.
All right, we'll take a break. Come right back after this.
I was really living a very anxiety-filled life. I turned on New Life, and the topic that day was about anxiety. And just by listening, I got relief.
You can help New Life Live stay in the air by joining Club New Life today. When you sign up to support us monthly through Club New Life, we'll send you a set of 4 devotionals, 100 Days of Character, Peace, Prayer, and the newly released 100 Days of Healing. Plus, there are ongoing benefits like access to the Club New Life video library, the monthly Club New Life CD or download, quarterly resources, free shipping on purchased resources, and discounts on workshops.
I did go to Take Your Life Back. That's been immensely helpful to me. That's why I continue to support the ministry with the hope that not only am I helping my own situation, that I'm helping others as well.
Support Club New Life, and together we can help hurting people find help and hope in life's hardest places. Call 1-800-639-5433 to join Club New Life today.
Welcome back to this classic program from the archives of New Life Live. If you're hurting and New Life can help, call 1-800-NEW-LIFE. That's 1-800-NEW-LIFE. Now back to New Life Live.
We're back. Got some great things coming up. Every Man's Battle, Marriage Conference, all these things you can find out about at newlife.com. Hope that you will. All right, let's talk with Alfred. Alfred, calling from Tucson, Arizona, listens on KGMS. Hello, Alfred.
Hey, hi. Thank you for having me on.
Certainly. What's going on in your life today?
Well, I don't even know where to start. My brother, for the past 2 years, we found this out a little bit ago, is a heroin addict.
Mm. Really?
And, yeah. So it's been a process. It's been very hard.
How far away does he live from you?
Well, actually, he was living with me. Until about a month or 2 months ago when I mean, I'm pretty sure he relapsed and he just kind of left thinking that he could do well by himself.
Okay. Well, how could we help you today?
He lives in the same city, but, with other family members, but then he's, like, with friends and so on and so forth. My question is, it's been hard just dealing with all of this. It's been hard on my mom.
Mm-hmm.
My father passed away when he was 33 years old. I'm 30 years old now. I was 5 years old back then.
Hmm.
And so she never married. She just raised where there's four of us. So finding this out for her has been kind of devastating. We're a Christian family, you know, because of my father's illness, he died of cancer.
Yeah.
We came to know the Lord. But it's just been really hard to kind of deal with all of this. And you know, my brother was raised in a Christian home. But I guess he started hanging out with the wrong type of people, friends or crowd. And little by little, you know, this was all a secret till about a couple months ago.
All right. Now, how could we help you?
My question is, how to deal with this? I mean, I've been trying to, you know, get him the help. I've been there for him. I'm a minister as well, and I, you know, I had him in my home. I have two children, and the hard part is how to help him, even though I know the help, he has to want the help, and it seems like he does want the help, but then he doesn't want the help.
Alfred, how many things did you find missing in your home?
What was that question? I'm sorry.
How many things are missing from your home?
No, actually, nothing is missing.
Good. Okay, then you're fortunate. I have a son who's a recovering heroin addict, and let me give you a couple things that you need to do. One is you need to really get educated about addiction.
Sure.
And the way to do that is to call one of the hospitals in your area that treats alcohol addiction, ask them if they have a speaker meeting, and start going to that meeting and taking your family, get your mom to go with you as well. One of the principles you have to follow, and there's no exception to it, is that when he's using, you have nothing to do with him. You can't help him. You can't give him any money. When he's in recovery, when he's trying to make things work, you give him all the support you can. But if you try to support him when he's using, you will end up resenting it. He'll just use you and take you for everything. Because that's one of the most powerful addictions a person can get caught in with heroin. It's one of the most addictive drugs you can get. And, you know, so I was told you could take 100 people and take them out in a parking lot and shoot them up with heroin, and 99 of them would become addicts.
Oh, wow.
So that's what you're dealing with. And so you're going to get a lot of behaviors that are painful and hurtful, but remember that's the addiction that's doing it. And when he's active in the addiction, you have nothing to do with him. You love him, but you don't help him. And when he wants to get the help and he sets it up to get the help, then you step in and provide the support. And it's important you do it, but only when he's initiating getting the help at that point.
And though at times, you know, 2 months ago when we found this out, I took him to detox here in the area. Mm-hmm. And he went through that, and he said it was horrible. Then we found the NA meeting, and we started going to that. You know, I started going with him.
Well, good for you.
Good.
You
good
were doing
you.
Some very yeah. healthy, wonderful things.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and the problem is that he was really good about it, and then I don't know if it's friends or what it is, and I know it's the addiction.
No, it's the addiction.
I can't lie to myself.
Well, you know,
he will relapse several times because of that powerful addiction. But each time, there's growth. Each time, he's moving forward. So don't give up on that.
Yeah, the way I look at it is every time he goes into treatment, he gets closer to getting well.
Definitely. Mm-hmm.
But, you know, relapse kind of has these four different stages. And, you know, the first stage is really compliance. You're not really motivated anymore, but you're going along with the program, which is better than not going along mm-hmm. with the program. But then you get confused and you start to wonder, well, was it really that bad? You know what? And so then...
And you watch the heroin addict go through, if you were to watch them go through detox, you think, how would they ever want to do that
right,
again, but
right.
that's that next stage.
The delusion.
Yeah.
So you get confused, and then you start to compromise. You start going back to that friend you knew. You start going back to that place, and just not going to go to that meeting this afternoon, and then the big catastrophe. So it isn't like a guy wakes up and says, I'm going to start using today. There's a process, and if you can intervene when you see them, not go to that one meeting and have the perfect excuse to not go, you intervene and you say, you're relapsing.
Mm-hmm.
by making anything more important than going to that meeting, you are in relapse, and you need to stop it before the big C happens.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Glad you called. I'm going to send you a Life Recovery Bible to give to your friend.
Your brother.
Your brother.
Give it to his brother when he gets into recovery.
Yeah, right.
But he reads it as part of understanding it.
Well, I love it that he said he went to the meeting.
Oh, that's great.
If we could just get more people to say, okay, I'm going to help this person. I'm going to go to the meeting with them. I'm going to find the meeting, go to the meeting. And you know the thing about they have to want it. Well, you know, I don't necessarily agree.
You may wait a long time for that to happen.
Yeah,
people.
That many times they go because it's the lesser of two evils. Mm-hmm. Or if I go this way, I have nothing to eat. If I go here, but at least I'm exposed to healing things, and I'm in a safe environment. And you know, you can. They say you can't lead a horse to water, but you can make him thirsty.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what is. You try to make the person thirsty for recovery. All right. If you are in need of help, we can help you in the area of addiction, whatever it is. Just call us at 1-800-NEW-LIFE. That's why we're here, is to help Christians and non-Christians with addiction problems. We really do believe there's a spiritual solution. If you talk to anybody who's been involved in a 12-step program, they'll say, hey, it's a spiritual program. And what that program does, it builds character in us, helps us face the reality of who we are, the people that we've hurt. It holds us accountable, and it gives us the path to making restitution, making it right with people, and then moving on to actually carrying the message to other folks. It's a wonderful path to get on, and it really does build character. So if you want to know about that and what we can do to help you, the number is 1-800-NEW-LIFE, and just call us, and we'll do whatever we can to help you with the addiction. We started talking about sexual addiction and whether or not that is a real addiction. I really believe gambling is one of those. If you ever see a gambling addict, it is amazing how much a gambling addict will lose before seeking help.
I taught a class at Fuller on addictions, and we had a film that somebody suggested we get. I think it was Owen Meany, and it was on gambling addiction.
Mm-hmm.
And the guy was taking money from his bank that he worked for and losing it. And finally he went, and he had enough winnings that he could have paid that all back. But he kept going, going. He could not and would not
totally
stop.
Yeah, and you see that. I was just to interrupt, but they keep going over and over again. Oftentimes, it made me remember one of the parts of the brain is the cingulate gyrus, which is the gear shifter of the brain.
Mm-hmm.
There's a compulsive. It's the same kind of area of the brain. If someone struggles with OCD, obsessive compulsive disorder, or just obsess, and we also see it a lot in addictions.
Yeah, it's. There's an obsession in addictions.
And so they just need to be treated. A lot of times underneath the addicted brain is a brain that's struggling and needs help. And that's why the relapse happens. People use because they're just trying to feel better.
And that's why to make the goal stopping is like telling Lady Macbeth, hey, quit wringing your hands and you won't feel guilty anymore. No, there's guilt there. And you have to deal with the underlying issue that
brain chemistry.
That's what recovery is all about.
That.
Doing that.
If you don't deal with that, then you've essentially stopped doing something that's destructive, which is a great idea. But how many people do we know talk about living with someone that's more miserable now that they've stopped because they haven't started the recovery?
Mm-hmm.
All right, we'll take a break. We'll come back for our final segment here of New Life Live right after this. 1-800-NEW-LIFE if you need some help.
To find out more information about New Life or to order any of the resources mentioned on today's program, call 1-800-NEW-LIFE. Now back to New Life Live.
We're back. Steve Arterburn here with Dr. Sherry Denham and Dr. Dave Stu.
Oh, what's
with
their names?
My friends.
Yeah. This is my final 10 minutes after 6 hours of being in the studio today. Forgive me, but we've got Elaine on the line from Noblesville, Indiana, actually kind of close to where I live. WQME is the station. Hello there.
Hi.
How could we help you today?
Well, first, thank you for taking my call, and
sure.
You guys are awesome.
Thank you.
You're welcome. And my question is about getting over the loss of your mom and sister, and how,
it's hard.
Yeah, it
so
is.
Hard.
And I lost my mom 10 years ago and my sister last year. And it's like I struggle with, that's the best I can do is just saying I lost them. I can't say anything else. And I'm trying to figure out if that's normal to go that long or if...
Well, you know what I think happened, Elaine, is that you grieved some for your mom and then you kind of got it under control. And then when your sister passed, that just opened everything up, and now you're grieving for both of them.
But I never really did get over my mom either. And
okay.
So it was just, like, added on, but okay. I have always... I'm kind of stuttering.
That's all right. What emotions have you experienced as you've grieved? Just the sadness?
Yeah, and just missing them, and mostly, yeah, just, you know, the sadness and not really being able to deal with it to a certain point.
You know, grieving has two facets to it. Sadness is one of them, and the other one is protest, anger. And women often have trouble doing that protest, the anger part of it. I think that's probably true for you.
Yeah, I have heard that you're supposed to get angry, but I've never been able to get angry. I don't even know who to be angry at.
Well, I mean, you can be angry at the doctors, you could be angry at the system, you could be angry at God, you could be angry at life. You might even get angry at mom for leaving you or your sister for leaving you, even though they had nothing of a choice in doing that. But
that's why I can't get mad at them, and I can't get mad at God.
Why?
I haven't been mad at God, and I can't get mad at them because I know they didn't want to leave.
Well, why can't you get mad at God?
Because I don't know. I don't blame him. It's just I can't get mad at him.
Do you get angry at anything ever?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. That's hopeful.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I don't stay angry, but I get angry, but I don't stay
okay.
angry.
See, there. If you think of it as protest. Don't you want to protest the loss of your mom, the loss of your sister? Don't you want to protest it with God and say why? Does that ever kind of cross your mind?
It does, but it doesn't stay there.
Mm-hmm.
If that makes sense, it's just kind of it's like I say it, and then I was like, well, no.
Okay, I wish you could stay with it, because I think that's what's mm-hmm. missing, is that you can't stay with it, and so you can't finish the grieving because you can't do that other facet of it.
It's almost like a hot potato.
Yeah.
You know, as a kid, we had that game mm-hmm. where you throw the hot potato around, and mm-hmm. like it's wound up, and you don't want it to go off when you're holding it. But it sounds like you're picking up on that, Dave. Elaine, what he's pointing out to is that... that you have a hard time just sitting in the feelings that go along with grief.
So what does it do? It keeps you attached to the person who's gone and separates you from the people that are here.
Yeah.
And so you feel very alone and very sad for a long time, even a decade.
Does that make sense, Elaine?
It does.
Yeah. Where do you go that you could even bring out these emotions for a period of time, just out of, you know, just to sit with them for 20, 30 minutes with somebody else? Where could you go for that?
I don't let myself stay there either. Mm-hmm. Like when I start going there, I talk myself out of staying there.
Uh-huh. And what's the outcome? What happens in your life because of that? Are you dealing with depression?
No, I don't think so.
But you're isolated.
To a point, yes.
Mm-hmm. It sounds to me like you have some grief that's unresolved, like Dave was talking about, but it sounds to me like you have another something else that's going on, too, is that it sounds like you're disconnected emotionally. Would you say that's true?
To some degree, I think so. I mean, I'm close to my family. They don't know I'm still dealing with this, but I'm...
And that's precisely my point.
Wow.
They don't know. You're really trying to deal with this all alone. And do you know what? Grief is meant to be dealt with another. If we don't feel that someone can actually experience the tears and the loss, like part of grief is done in community.
Mm-hmm.
Because if I'm sad and I am angry or whatever, and I do that in isolation, it's just like me and me and me. There's not resolution. But if I see the compassion on somebody else's face and somebody else can comfort me, it's like you're trying to comfort yourself from something that you need to be comforted for. You need comfort. You need mm-hmm. to be comforted. That means other people.
That's how God does his comforting, is through other people. You know, in the Old Testament, when King Saul and Jonathan died, David does a lament for Jonathan. I think it's in 2 Kings, about the 4th chapter. And the purpose of it was to lead the people of Israel in their grief.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
His grieving was done in public to lead the people in grieving for their king and for the prince that had just died in battle. And that's what you were just saying. And so you got to find a grief group, Elaine, and ask your pastor where there's a grief group, and get in a group of other people who are grieving and help each other and encourage each other.
They'll help you resolve the 10 years and the loss of both significant women.
In the old days, they hired people to grieve.
Yeah.
You needed grieving people around you
to help you grieve.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It's just part of it.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, one of the realities that we're facing here is a potential grief if we have to go off of the air in your area. And there are some stations, you can find them on our website, that are in jeopardy. And we have been told if we don't stay current, we're gone. They have another program to take our place, and we don't want that. And January is such a tough month, low giving month after December. We need your help. And maybe you didn't give at the end of the year. Maybe you've thought about giving. You could really help us stay right where you're watching us or listening to us by giving a gift to New Life Live. So please come and join us and be part of the New Life Giving family. We really do need your help. We've never needed your help more. Extremely, extremely worried about what might happen. We trust God, but we're looking at the reality, and I'm hoping that God is nudging you to call us and to help us through this difficult time. 1-800-NEW-LIFE. That's the number to call if you can help. 1-800-NEWLIFE.
Thanks for listening. We hope this program has helped you by giving you insights for handling the challenges you face in your life. We want you to know that we're here for you, but you also need to know that New Life Live is a listener-supported ministry. To make your donation or to get any of the resources mentioned on today's program, call 1-800-NEW-LIFE. That's 1-800-639-5433, or write to us at New Life Ministries, P.O. Box 1029, Lake Forest, California, 92609. Please join us again on Monday for New Life Live. Today's podcast can be downloaded through iTunes or streamed through your mobile device using the New Life app. Visit newlife.com to download the app today.